The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. In the 2020 general election, voters in Oregon approved ballot measure 109, the Oregon Psilocybin Services Initiative. That law directs the Oregon Health Authority to license and regulate the manufacturing, transportation, delivery, sale, and purchase of psilocybin products and the provision of psilocybin services. OHA will work with the Oregon Psilocybin Advisory Board to establish rules and regulations implementing Measure 109 and the use of psilocybin products and services. The development period started January 1, 2021. It runs through December 31, 2022. As they state on their site, OHA will not be issuing licenses or accepting applications related to the manufacture, sale, and purchase of psilocybin products and the provisions of psilocybin services until January 2, 2023. Now, the advisory board has subcommittees working on research, products, licensing, and equity. I had the good fortune to speak with a couple of people who are on the equity subcommittee, Ilan Hagens and Rebecca Martinez, co-founders of the Fruiting Bodies Collective in Portland, Oregon.
Hi, my name is Ilan Hagens. I am born and raised in Portland, Oregon, and I am one of the co-founders of Fruiting Bodies Collective.
And I am Rebecca Martinez, also born in Portland, Oregon, and I am the second co-founder of Fruiting Bodies.
As you mentioned, you're members of the board's Health Equity Committee. Can you tell us about some of the work you're doing with that?
Yeah, for sure. We were saying earlier, like, part of the mission of Fruiting Bodies is equitability. See, I can't talk either. You made it equitability. And so that being said, like, within the subcommittee, that is where we like flourish. And because we're getting to use some of what we are doing every day within Fruiting Bodies Collective and some of our needs, we're able to kind of put that at the forefront and bring that up into to the state level. So where we can like voice from our community, what their opinions are up at the front. And one of the things that I think Beck and I are always good for, it's always kind of being like, not that whistleblower, but that person, those people to kind of like ask like, hey, what about this? Do you think about if you did this, could this be more equitable? I can't talk today. But one of the things is like, when we're talking about products, when we're talking about farming, we're talking about like fees and licensure, all the things that are encompassing what we'll be rolling out, and that has actually like kind of rolled out with like cannabis. We are like, hey, let's take a step back, because if you're going to require a lot of these things, we need to make sure that people can afford to actually get into this industry. I'm using industry with air quotes, into this industry. Can somebody who's a small farmer become a grower, or are they just going to be dominated and taken over by somebody who gets like a 100,000 square foot grow warehouse? Like, and if you're requiring it to be an indoor thing or a certain model, let's have some funds in there. Let's see what we can do. And with everything that we do, that's where we are. We're like, okay, you're going to require that. Well, let's see if we can make it better and easier and simpler. And there's so many things in so many different categories where we are actually like really involved within those decisions.
Yeah. Part of what feels important is making sure that the general board of advisors is asking the right questions and operating from the right set of assumptions. And if they're not, challenging those assumptions and raising issues that need to be at the table in order to make good, wise, fair decisions. So as Ilan said, everything from the funding, which is going to be a huge piece of it, you know, the question of is equity an afterthought, or is it baked into the fabric of this program? And that our biggest goal is to learn from the lessons of the cannabis industry. We have several people on the Health Equity Subcommittee who are deeply involved and have a lot of experience with what went on. For better or worse, those lessons can directly inform what we're doing now. And if we don't learn from those lessons, we can see how this is going to go. We can see how those already at the top, already having access and privilege, will continue to do so. And the rest of us will wish that we hadn't voted for this program. And so it remains to be decided. And we say all the time, Measure 109 has yet to earn our trust. And it has yet to earn the trust of all of the people who we represent. So a part of what we're here to do is remind everybody there's still time. There's still almost a year and a half. Policies are still being made, and we need public engagement. And so on our website, we have a form where people can submit anonymous comment, or they can say who they are. And that helps us to know what is on people's minds and helps us to see our blind spots and bring the right issues forward to the subcommittee and then forward up the line to the main board. I just feel like it's so easy to take what has already been done and replicate it. And part of what we've been facing on the health equity subcommittee is the pace at which this is happening is actually quite fast. We're inventing a program almost from nothing. And so the temptation to copy paste from other industries is there. And if we're doing that, then as a health equity subcommittee, we're constantly in reaction mode, which is like, oh, slow down. That's a no. This is inherently unfair and unjust. This inherently drops people out of the bottom and privileges those with more access. And so if we're not going to be in a reactive state for the next year and a half, part of our job at the equity subcommittee is to talk with the community, talk to experts from their respective fields, and dream up new models and new creative ways so that we can be one step ahead and say, hey, instead of trying to take this format for, say, licensing or security or funding, let's imagine something new. And here, oh, we've already thought about it. We've laid it out. Here's a proposal. Let's see how that compares with some of your other experts, and let's put something together that meets these needs from the beginning. So, and it's a completely uncharted territory. We haven't, working with a state board, working to create a program that literally does not exist in our nation or really anywhere in the world, a program like this, it's like stumbling through the dark, you know? And so you have to have the right people who you trust to stumble through the dark with, and you have to know that people aren't going to be running off in all directions, making decisions that will benefit their businesses in the future at the expense of the collective. So that's really our end game. And it's an amazing crew. I'm so glad that the Health Equity Subcommittee is made up of who it is. And we have so much work to do. So I think our biggest ask for anyone listening is to please engage with us, whether you send us two sentences in an email or a long rant about everything you feel about mushrooms, underground, above ground. These things really help us, and they will be heard by those making decisions. And so that's kind of our goal, is to help bridge that gap.
Now, just to make sure people can, where is the, what's the web address?
Our website is fruitingbodiescollective.com.
That was part of my conversation with Elon Higgins and Rebecca Martinez. They're co-founders of the Fruiting Bodies Collective in Portland, Oregon. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The award-winning journalist and best-selling author Maya Solovitz has a new book out. Official release is July 27th. The title is Undoing Drugs, The Untold Story of Harm Reduction and the Future of Addiction. I've been reading an advanced review copy, and it's a brilliant book. No surprise there. I'm kind of a fan of Maya's work. Don't know if you could tell. Anyway, I'm scheduled to do an interview with Maya later this week, so I'll have that for you on next week's show. You know, I've had the honor of hosting and producing Century of Lies for more than 7 years now. Century of Lies is syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network to community radio stations around the country, as well as being available as a direct download and as a podcast on all your favorite services. This is a volunteer-produced, non-commercial program. That's no commercials, no sponsorships. I don't get paid for this. I do this in my spare time. I do this work because I think that the issues we talk about on Century are important. And it's vital that progressive voices get heard on these issues. Pro-reform voices. The voices of people with lived experience. The voices of people who still use drugs. Now, you may be listening to this as a podcast or a download. And if so, well, thank you. You have a lot of choices out there. Lots. My old friend Ethan Nadelman, he's the latest to enter this crowded drug policy podcast field. He's got backing and a budget. Well, and it's Ethan, so you know he's going to storm it. I wish him all the best. You may, on the other hand, be listening to this on a community radio station. And if so, well, thank you. And thanks especially to the station. There are a lot of shows out there. I'm honored that you've chosen to include Century of Lies on your broadcast schedule. Community media, community radio, it's more important than ever these days. Community radio is an outlet for local journalism. Community radio provides a platform for discussions on a variety of topics, important issues, controversial issues. Community radio helps to amplify the voices of people who are often unrepresented on commercial media. And that brings me to this personal request. Please support your local community and public media. Become a member. Maybe become a volunteer if you can. It's easy. Go to their website. I guarantee you'll see a button with the word donate. Just click and go from there. Thank you. By the way, you're listening to Century of Lies, and I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Well, that's more talking than I've done in the last half dozen or so shows combined. You know, this may sound like an odd thing for someone who does radio to say, but I'm not that fond of the sound of my own voice. So let's hear some other voices. July 21st was the International Day of Remembrance for People Who Use Drugs. The International Network of People Who Use Drugs, INPUD, along with UNAIDS and the Global Network of People Living with HIV, held an event to observe that day. Let's hear from the Executive Director of INPUD, Judy Chang.
So just for people that may not know, INPUD is a global peak representative body working to protect the health and defend the rights of people who use drugs. So as Sasha had mentioned, 21st of July is International Drug User Remembrance Day, and where we take the time to remember peers, loved ones, family and friends who have died due to the global war on drugs. And we take time to really honor their lives because the rest of the world does not. And this is because of criminalization, stigma and discrimination. Many of us who are here today and gathered today have survived through overdose, and in spite of incarceration or risk of incarceration and multiple instances of violence and neglect. But today I also wanted to mark our involvement in the GMP Plus and UNAIDS Global Partnership for Action to eliminate all forms of HIV-related stigma and discrimination, which Sasha had also mentioned before. And this is because a key goal of INPUD's work is to really fight back against the stigma and discrimination faced by peers around the world every day. So stigma and discrimination is a direct consequence of the war on drugs. When our human rights are violated, not only is there often not much public outcry, but perversely, it's often encouraged or celebrated or used to score political points. Our lives as people who use drugs are dogged by stigma, and that is a lot of negative and othering attitudes and prejudices that portray us as criminal, deviant, immoral, or in complete contradiction, also weak, irrational, and disordered victims who cannot know our own minds and therefore what is good for us. We're often treated as undeserving of health and social services and denied basic rights of a citizen. And unfortunately, this often also translates into self-stigma, where we feel that, you know, we don't deserve more, and it ends up masking the real culprits of the problem or the real root of the problem. And what this does is create a vicious perpetuating cycle that makes it harder and harder to demand the rights that we deserve. And of course, the way that this stigma actualizes is through discriminatory laws, policies, and practices, which is seen across multiple settings. One of that being health, where we are on the one hand denied treatment, but also on the other hand subject to mandatory, coercive, and compulsory treatment. In education and workplace settings, we can be expelled from schools, universities, fired from jobs, and in family and community settings, often experience violence that happens with impunity. And of course, this is all underlined by discrimination within the justice settings because of the near universal criminalization of drug use and people who use drugs, which means we lack access to justice. There is mass incarceration and police harassment that reflects racial inequalities and violence, which is at times state perpetrated. And I think, you know, what we often forget is that ultimately stigma can kill. As, of course, people who use drugs are often a forgotten population, data is scarce, but the 2020 World Drug Report reports that 585,000 people died of drug use under prohibition in 2017. And we also know, as predicted, that the overdose epidemic is really spinning out of control also due to COVID. So in the US in 2020, over 90,000 people have died of a drug overdose. And this is not accounting for the tens of thousands each year that die due to, say, the death penalty, extrajudicial killings and violence and neglect. So yeah, as Sasha had mentioned before, we're launching in collaboration with GMP Plus and UNAIDS, the More Than campaign. And we are collecting photos and will continue to do so to memorialize people whose lives have been lost because of criminalization, stigma, and discrimination. And as was also spoken about by the other speakers, the campaign is really about demonstrating that people who use drugs are more than a casualty and statistic. And that each loss is a preventable tragedy, and that not only affects people who are left behind, but does rob the world of human potential. So there is, on our website, you will find instructions on how to participate in the campaign. So, you know, I think it is the time in launching and introducing the global partnership that we really do work together to demand change in strategic allyship. And I really see the global partnership as an opportunity for people who use drugs to be working with donors, governments, UN agencies, and academia to really demand action on stigma and discrimination related to HIV status, drug use, sex work, sexual orientation, and gender identity. You know, we can't, it can no longer be taken for granted and just treated as an acceptable status quo. So just in summarizing, you know, we really do not, people who use drugs, we do not lose our dignity and should not lose our freedoms nor our very lives, which is happening simply because of substances that we choose to put in our bodies.
That was Judy Chang, Executive Director of the International Network of People Who Use Drugs. Now let's hear from Suki Beavers from UNAIDS.
On July 21st, the community of people who use drugs honors and remembers those whose lives have been tragically cut short due to discriminatory laws, policies, and attitudes. We also gathered together to demand the changes required to avoid any more loss. This is a day to show the world that people who use drugs, who lost their lives, are more than just unfortunate statistics that are used to bolster punitive policies. Rather, we must remember them as individuals in all their diversity who became casualties of these policies. We've known for a long time now that punitive approaches such as the criminalization of people who use drugs do not work in reducing harmful drug use. We also know that punitive approaches, along with stigma and discrimination, fuel the epidemic, increase vulnerability to harm, and lead to wholly avoidable deaths. It's so important to emphasize that deaths and casualties are entirely preventable. This means changing policies and practices and ending stigma and discrimination and criminalization, which are so harmful in so many ways, including by hindering people who use drugs from accessing a safe supply of drugs and harm reduction measures, including safe injecting material. Also, because they result in people who use drugs, particularly women, often using alone. They also result in people who use drugs facing violence, arbitrary arrest, and detention. And in short, people who use drugs are denied or driven away from life-saving counseling or health services. All of these impacts vastly increase the risk of overdose, mortality, or morbidity among people who use drugs. And the evidence of these impacts is reflected in the trends of the HIV epidemic. While the last decade has seen a decline in deaths attributed to HIV and AIDS among people who use drugs, they remain 29 times more likely to acquire HIV than those who do not use drugs. And they accounted for 1 out of 10 new infections in 2019. And despite this, much of the world continues to wage a war on drugs that does more harm than good, and to turn its back on people who use drugs. For example, less than 1% of people who inject drugs live in countries with the UN recommended levels of coverage of needles, syringes, and opioid substitution therapy. We know that attitudes and policies rooted in human rights can reverse this trend, just as enabling legal environments that leave no one behind are essential to effective HIV responses. Community-led harm reduction services are essential for reducing the burden of HIV, viral hepatitis, and overdose mortality. And these services need to be coupled with advocacy, especially towards healthcare providers, law enforcement, and parliamentarians, to reduce the stigma and discrimination experienced by people who use drugs. This is what the new global AIDS strategy adopted earlier this year seeks to do: to support community-led service delivery and advocacy and remove the human rights barriers and inequalities that hinder our goals of ending AIDS by 2030. It includes new social enabler targets so that by 2025, less than 10% of people living with or affected by HIV experience stigma and discrimination. Less than 10% experience gender-based inequalities and gender-based violence. And less than 10% of countries have punitive laws and policies in place. This is the 10-10-10 that we hope you will all be hearing about. The strategy also includes a target to ensure that 60% of the programs to achieve these societal enabler targets are community-led, and a target to increase to 80% the coverage of key population prevention services that are community-led. And by definition, community-led prevention and societal enabler programs for people who use drugs should be led by the networks of people who use drugs. These impressive targets were also included in the political declaration on HIV and AIDS that was adopted just a few weeks ago. With our collective efforts, we can hold countries accountable for meeting these commitments. We know that we will not reach our goal of ending AIDS as a public health threat by 2030 if we fail to reach these targets, fail to scale up support to community-led responses, fail to tackle stigma and discrimination, and fail to decriminalize drug possession, sex work, same-sex relations, and HIV transmission. I'm really happy that we have the global partnership to support countries' commitments to reaching this goal, and to identify opportunities for targeted advocacy and action. And I'm grateful that through the hashtag More Than campaign, we're coming together today, although virtually, to commemorate the lives of those we've lost and to look collectively at how we can prevent more loss.
That was Suki Beavers from UNAIDS. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. While we have time, here's Ernesto Cortez, Secretario of the Latin American Network of People Who Use Drugs.
This document also, to let you know, we made it up with my peer and good friend Veronica Russo from Argentina, Raul Esteban Valencia from Colombia, and we had participation of at least 35 to 40 people from 15 different Latin American countries in each conversatory. So general results, it's definitely stigma and discrimination and criminalizations are the main problems we suffer. Violence from police and other security institutions are the worst of all. As I said, many of us, if not all of us, have experienced violence from policing. Pathologization and compulsory treatment are really common practices in Latin America. There is no involvement at all of in public policies related to HIV or drug use for drug users. As I said, we're not even considered key populations in most of Latin American countries. And there are few harm reduction programs in few countries in Latin America. I could say besides Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, or Mexico, there are almost no harm reduction in our region. So as part of these consultations we made, we had one of our peers from Chile, explaining us a little bit how this psychiatric view of drug use and drug users is risen. It began in the 19th century with this idea of the born criminal, as thinking that every drug user is an addict, as we all people who use drugs have problems related to this use, and that we are sick. And it's directly compared with other vulnerable populations and criminalized populations, as sex workers, people with mental illness, or even political criminals. So this is really important to understand how this stigma is created and how to debunk it. We also had a case from Shay from Ecuador, a woman, she's a mother, she was pregnant, and she was stopped next day after the Global Marijuana March in Quito, Ecuador. She was held 27 hours by police, was violated and abused. She even lost her baby due to the mistreatment and had to be hospitalized due to miscarriage. And this is an example of the violence and disregard of police forces in our region. This is also a common practice. I could go on and tell how many people have suffered. Ecuador has also had a case a couple of months ago of a rehab center that caught up fire and 14 young people died burned because they were locked in. So there's no rehab treatment, it's prison at the end. So as I said, people who use drugs are not recognized as key population in America, in Latin America. Community-based advocacy is scarce, and there's almost no support for denouncing and defending our human rights. So this is the key action of our visibility and our allies. This is what was said by Laura Blanco, our peer from Uruguay. So this partnership with GNP and how some of our countries, GNP Plus, sorry, and some of our countries is going forward, it's a key element, and we want to take it as part of our work in LAMPED. And as our friend Julian Quintero from Colombia, that many of you might know, said during these conversatories, a drug-free world is not possible. We need to live in peace with drugs and people who use them. It is time to come out of our psychoactive closets and advance in the claim of our rights. We are showing the situations we live as drug users, but also we have the power to change them. We are not the problem, but part of the solution. Stop putting the target on drugs and its harm and start looking at human beings. So thank you very much from LAMPED. And this is our website. If you want to check out this document and other videos we put out, they're all in Spanish. So we're trying to start translating also to Portuguese, that is really important, and next to English. Thank you very much.
That was Ernesto Cortez, Secretario of the Latin American Network of People Who Use Drugs. He was speaking on an event to observe the International Day of Remembrance for People Who Use Drugs. And for now, folks, that's it. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Century of Lies. Find this edition of Century of Lies along with an archive of past shows at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. There's a link there to subscribe to the Century of Lies podcast. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh, and of course also at Drug Policy Facts. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.